United States against Taylor. Mr. Jones.
May it please the court. I'm Bill Jones from Madison, Wisconsin. I represent Rhianne Taylor in her appeal for the remand and resentence based upon errors on application of sentencing guideline areas as well as reasonableness of her sentence. I don't want to seem to abandon the reasonableness argument, but I wanted to use my time to focus more on the two sentencing guideline errors that were raised in the appeal. The issues relating to her guideline have to do with a drug calculation done in the PSR, and kind of demonstrate the problem that arose in using a PSR in relevant conduct that applied to all four defendants, or all three defendants that pled and were sentenced right around the same time. It almost appears as a cut and paste. Her relevant conduct includes a description of drug sales that Michelle Nelson, a co-defendant and co-conspirator, did prior to Rhianne Taylor's entry into the conspiracy. They also describe drug deals and sales that Jamie Breesmeister, a co-conspirator, did outside the conspiracy with a different source other than Michelle Nelson. And those were raised at the sentencing, and the judge took the short route and said, well, even if I agree with everything you said and I take out what Jamie Breesmeister did outside the conspiracy and only focus on what Ms. Taylor admitted to seeing and doing, I still think it exceeds 1.5 kilograms of methamphetamine. And I disagree with that. The evidence there that she focused in on are two things. She said you saw...
You heard my reaction to a prior lawyer. Why do we care whether you disagree with it? The question is not whether you're representing the defendant. Obviously you are. Mm-hmm. The question is whether the finding is clearly erroneous, and your disagreement or not doesn't bear on that question.
Correct. The judge made a mistake.
No, that's not the question. The finding stands unless it's clearly erroneous. Now, why is it clearly erroneous?
It's clearly erroneous because the evidence does not support the two bases that the judge articulated for coming to that 1.5 kilogram amount, or in excess. One was that she admitted to seeing 2 pounds of methamphetamine at Michelle Nelson's place. You couldn't come to that conclusion that it was seen during the time that she was part of the conspiracy. That was erroneous. She also claims that because Ms. Taylor...
And that would have been the bulk of the calculation, correct, those 2 pounds?
I agree,
and
yes.
Where it was undated as to whether it... Because she had a relationship with them prior to getting involved in the conspiracy.
Yes, she was a family friend and knew her for a long time. Ms. Nelson was selling drugs based upon, you know, the PSR and the complaint from 2001 until 2004. PSR further indicated that Rhianne Taylor was only part of it from 2003 to 2004. So she could have seen that at any time before, or even in 2005 before the whole thing kind of collapsed and people started being arrested. And that is a large bulk, and there's no support for a finding that she saw that while she was part of the conspiracy. The other is that Rhianne Taylor said to police when they interviewed her that she had dealt in multiple ounce quantities. Well, I'm certainly not suggesting that that would mean 4 ounces, but I don't know how that leads to a conclusion that her involvement or knowledge of other co-conspirators involved 1.5 kilograms of methamphetamine. So it's just an argument that the record does not support just jumping to that conclusion, particularly when the judge said, I'm going to focus on those two statements based upon an argument that the other should not apply because her involvement in the conspiracy and such was only during that specific time.
And was there any reference in that statement that she made to a time frame?
Dealing in multiple quantities?
Yes.
I believe the PSR said that they were talking to her at that time while she was selling. I don't know that she specifically said it was during 2003 and 2004, although that would apply even if it wasn't, during the conspiracy time period. It was her dealing that she was talking about. Then the second guideline point or issue has to do with the two-level increase for...
Well, let's go back for a minute. So if the bulk is this two pounds, you know, what does that leave that the court attributed to her for the multi-gram sales? Multi-ounce sales?
That's a good question. There was no further statement as to what that meant. She simply said, you admitted to seeing two pounds of meth and admitted to dealing in multiple ounce quantities. That's enough by the preponderance of the evidence to suggest that your involvement, just based upon your own admissions, was over 1.5 kilograms. The other guideline issue has to do with a two-level increase for possessing a gun. There's no evidence that she possessed a gun, but rather it's based on a co-conspirator possessing a gun. And the point being that the judge found that Michelle Nelson possessed a gun, and it was not improbable to conclude that she used it to further her drug sales, and that Rianne Taylor should have foreseen that it would be used to further the drug sales. However, she never articulated anything about why Rianne Taylor would know that Michelle Nelson or foreseen that Michelle Nelson would have had a gun in her residence where she was keeping drugs and selling drugs. I think that's just a misstatement of what the analysis should be. Based upon that, it doesn't really provide any help to the court as to whether or not the judge was finding, and based upon what evidence she was finding, that Ms. Taylor knew about Michelle Nelson possessing a gun. However, the one thing that she did articulate as to it, and Jamie Breesmeister did not get that enhancement, but Rianne Taylor did, and so the only thing I can surmise from the statement is that she lived with Michelle Nelson for a short time. She returned from Indiana, lived with Michelle Nelson for a short time, Michelle and Tim, and then moved into her own trailer. And I presume the court was assuming that since you lived in the house for a short time, you must have known or had reason to believe that there was a gun, but I can't articulate why the judge concluded that otherwise.
But wasn't there in the PSI statements to the effect that numerous customers had reported seeing shotguns, rifles, pistols, and revolvers in the bedroom, living room, and yard, that they'd seen Taylor in and out of the home, and, you know, that the possession, I mean, the guns were out in the open, apparently.
I think that the witnesses said, and there were many, many, many witnesses, and five of them said, yes, I saw guns. I presume everyone was asked this, and I don't know that the others said that they saw it. So you have...
Yeah, but the others weren't there on a regular basis, as I understand the record, in terms of her being in and out all the time.
Yes. I don't recall the exact language of the PSR, but if that's... That may be in there, from the judge's colloquy, the best that I could gather was that. She said, two levels are added because your co-defendants possessed at least one firearm during the course of the conspiracy. It is not clearly improbable that the firearms were connected to the conspiracy's drug trafficking activity, and it was reasonably foreseeable to you that the firearms were related to that activity. But she never really comments on why it was foreseeable that Michelle Nelson would possess the gun. And I think that that's an element that needed to be supported somewhere in the record, and I don't know that it was. But if you have no further questions, I'd reserve the rest for rebuttal. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Jones. Mr. O'Shea.
Good morning. Tim O'Shea again for the United States. I will address the two issues addressed by Mr. Jones. First, whether the district court was clearly erroneous in determining that Ms. Taylor was responsible for at least 1.5 kilograms of methamphetamine, and whether the district court was plainly erroneous in determining that Ms. Taylor was responsible at sentencing for the firearms possessed by her co-conspirators, the Nelsons. Turning to the first issue, the district court was not clearly erroneous in finding the drug quantity for really two big reasons. The first one is that Mr. Jones here conceded that the unopposed facts in the PSR established that Ms. Taylor was either just above or just below the 1.5 kilogram threshold. Mr. Jones said that he disagreed now. Well, he was considerably less emphatic when he was appeared before the district court.
So the concession was just below or just above the 1.5?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's what Mr. Jones said on two occasions to the district court at sentencing. And that really goes as a starting point to the heart of the clearly erroneous standard. If the district court's view of the evidence was permissible, as the defense counsel conceded at sentencing, it cannot be reasonably overturned on appeal. The second sort of overarching reason that the district court was not clearly erroneous is the facts themselves. And from the facts, we sort of have to get into the math a little bit. Most of the argument, the questions directed to Mr. Jones dealt with the 2 pounds of methamphetamine that Ms. Taylor saw at the Nelson home. Now, before it's worth reflecting that before Ms. Taylor moved to the Nelson home, she lived in Indiana. Before that, she lived in Minnesota. So while she lived in Minnesota, theoretically, she could have come across the border to the Nelson's home. But when the officers were talking to him, to Ms. Taylor, they're focusing in on her drug relationship with the Nelsons, and that's when she talked about finding the 2 pounds of methamphetamine in a cooler in the Nelsons' home. Defense counsel opined at sentencing, and again here, that maybe it was outside of the period of time that Ms. Taylor was involved with the Nelsons. I respectfully submit that that's improbable, given the short amount of time between when Ms. Taylor moved in with the Nelsons and she flat out said to the investigators, a short time later she became involved with methamphetamine sales.
And give us those dates.
Well, she moved in, and she lived in Indiana. Then she returned to Minnesota. She was immediately arrested on pre-existing warrants. The Nelsons bailed her out, and she moved into the Nelsons' home in early 2003. And it's not real clear in the record. The best indicator of that is probably one of Mr. Jones's letters he wrote to the court before sentencing, trying to get a handle on the whole timing. But even there, he says, well, we're really talking sometime in January 2003 or February 2003 that she moved in. And then, as Ms. Taylor says, she began her involvement in the distribution of methamphetamine a short time after she moved in with the Nelsons. The other part about it is, although the defense has argued just maybe that her seeing this 2 pounds or 907 grams of methamphetamine, just maybe it's outside the range, there's no proof of it. And it's sort of, the defense puts the court the appellate court in a tough position to say that a finding of the court is impermissible if it provides no opposing facts to support that view. And then, you know, there are, you know, we can go through the math, but I'm not going to take the court's time. It's laid out in the government's brief and the argument. But the bottom line is, if you add it all up, the district court reasonably conceded, found that the quantities suggest that the amount is above 1.5 kilograms. It's 1.6 kilograms by my math. All of that is corroborated by an unopposed statement of Michelle Nelson in the PSR that she distributed to Ms. Taylor an ounce a week, either an ounce a week or a quarter pound of methamphetamine every week. And it's also, there's no dispute that Ms. Taylor was involved in the conspiracy for 18 months. Well, do the math. And that winds out, even if you take the lower amount, the 1 ounce per week for 18 months, multiply it out, that works out to be in excess of 2 kilograms. In other words, 2.041 kilograms. So based on the unopposed facts in the record, there's no real dispute, I respect.
Yeah, because by your calculation, you don't even have to include those 2 pounds.
Well, you know,
to reach that amount.
Yeah. Well, you always have to be careful, Your Honor, right, that you're not counting it when it's at the dealer's house and then when it's distributed down the road. It's independently corroborating. But if you don't have to worry about that 2 pounds because Ms. Nelson says, hey, look, an ounce a week. Now, that might have been part of that 2 pounds, might not. Doesn't matter. It's more than 1.5 kilograms, no matter how you sort it out. Now, the other thing is, let's deal with the gun. The district court was not plainly erroneous in finding that the firearm was reasonably foreseeable to Ms. Taylor. This is numerous firearms. Now, this is under plain error. And the first thing the defense has to show is that there was error and it was plain. Well, I respectfully submit that defense cannot show that there was error at all. Without dispute, Ms. Taylor did move in with the Nelsons, live with them for a period of time, and then she was a frequent visitor to their home thereafter. And she went into the same rooms where methamphetamine was stored. She went into the same rooms where firearms were stored. And it's clear enough from the record in the PSR that there are firearms in the living room. There's firearms in the Nelson's bedroom. There's firearms in another bedroom. There are firearms all over the place. Those same firearms were seen by people, well, of course, by the law enforcement when they executed the search warrant, but they're also seen by other people who visited the Nelson's home less frequently than Ms. Taylor, to include her boyfriend, Mr. Thomas, and two of Ms. Taylor's customers, Mr. Tucker and Mr. Peters. You know, based on these undisputed facts, I respectfully submit that the record shows not just that the guns were reasonably foreseeable that they were there, but that Ms. Taylor saw those firearms with her own eyeballs. Now, Mr. Jones would reasonably say, well, hold the phone here. There's no evidence that nobody testified that Ms. Taylor saw these firearms. And that's true, but that circles us right back to the standard of review. The defense didn't object to this at all below. And had the defense objected to the 2 points being attributed to Ms. Taylor, well, then we would have had the opportunity to call the Nelsons, to call the other folks who testified before the grand jury and establish this fact. But the defendant did not decide to do so, and consequently he can't show that it's error. The defense also quibbles with the words that the court chose to attribute the firearms to Ms. Taylor. I respectfully submit that implicit in the court's findings about this point, the court found that Ms. Taylor implicitly, reasonably foresaw the guns or saw them with their own eyeballs, as I say. The court found, again without challenge, that Ms. Taylor's co-defendants possessed firearms. It was not clearly improbable that those firearms were connected with drug dealing, and that it was reasonably foreseeable to Ms. Taylor that the firearms were related to drug dealing. Now, defense counsel quibbles with the court's choice of words, but absent an objection, the court would have had no reason to revisit those words. And the defense can't show that Ms. Taylor's substantial rights are affected at all. So that's all for me. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Jones?
I don't think I have much time, but Mr. O'Shea pointed out that there were no opposing facts raised as to the assertions that she saw the 2 pounds. There were, and I raised them, that Ms. Taylor had a long history with the Nelsons for years before and in 2005. That is an opposing fact as to the conclusion. And the judge articulated at sentencing that she said, even if I just rely on what you told me, Ms. Taylor, I come to 1.5 kilograms. She didn't talk anything about I'm going to rely on Ms. Nelson said. So, nothing further. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And Mr. Jones, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been to the court as well as to your client. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until